always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach, Goldberg and Ramil, talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news, got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheap. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. It's Monday morning. We're recording this on a Sunday, but for you, it's Monday morning. That means it's time for the mailbag. But first, let's talk a little bit about this Heat-Celtics game. Miami lost 96-90 to Boston on Saturday night. Let's recap that a little bit before we get into our mailbag. It was close at halftime, and the Heat kept it relatively close. The Celtics went on a run there in the third quarter, but with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the Heat had narrowed the gap to 88-86, but that's when Kyrie Irving for the Celtics took over. They go on an 8-4 run in which Kyrie Irving scores the seven of the final 8 points, puts the Celtics over the hump. They beat the Heat 96-90. The Heat now are 2-3 on the season. They've lost now two games on the road trip. On the homestand. Two games on the six-game homestand, which is not a great percentage. But those two games were against Boston and San Antonio, so maybe it's not that bad after all. What do you think?
I do think it's a concern, honestly. Okay. After the Spurs game, I think we talked about it, and it's indicative of an overall problem with his team. And I think even some of Goran Dragic's comments following the game indicate that the Heat feel that they're concerned as well, that they're not playing to the level that they should be. And in fact, made the same comparison I did, which this is very indicative of what they did at the start of last year, where they just didn't seem to have much of a rhythm and much of a flow to their offense. So I kind of dug into the numbers a little bit, not to get away too much from the Boston recap. And Miami's offense, to me, seems to be mostly the problem. I think, a lot of their defense could be attributed to the loss of Hassan Whiteside and them trying to compensate for his absence. But even if they were playing at full strength offensively, I think that maybe their game would, the defense would probably shift accordingly. They'd be able to play better defense because their offense would be, flowing more smoothly. And as far as the numbers are concerned, now, obviously the style that they played best last year was the drive and kick game. The drive component is working really well. They're second in drives overall among any team in the NBA. Third in overall field goal percentage, field goal attempts rather, 21.8 attempts per game. And first in field goal made on drive. So they're still connecting those drives at a high rate. The problem is the kick aspect because there aren't enough shooters there. Their three-point shooting continues to be a problem. They're 21st in three-point field goal percentage at 32.9. 29th in free throw attempts also. That's a big problem. They're just not getting to the line enough.
Yeah.
And catch and shoot situations, they're 22nd on field goal percentage. 34.0% overall and 33.6 on three-point attempts from the catch and shoot game. So my feeling is that, maybe we had kind of mocked Luke Babbitt a little bit.
Maybe.
But his game was very equipped. Like, it fit perfectly, and it was very complimentary of this drive and kick offense. He wasn't going to do too much. He put the ball down occasionally, but not nearly enough to be a major problem. He was ready to catch the ball. He was always on the perimeter, and he was knocking those down at a really high percentage. And with a guy like him absent, and unfortunately, a number of players taking a step back in their overall three-point shooting percentages, that seems to be the problem. The kick aspect isn't working because there's nobody to kick down out to who's going to knock down those shots at a regular level.
What you're saying is indicative of what happened in the Boston game. Miami made only 43% of their field goals overall, only 22.6%. They were 7 of 31 from three-point range against the Celtics. And you have the guys that are supposed to be making these. Wayne Ellington, he was 1 of 6. Goran Dragic was 1 of 4. Deion Waiters was 1 of 4. James Johnson, who's been a problem from three-point range so far this season, 1 of 5. James Johnson making that maybe last season, his shooting clip from 3-point range, making that look as though it might be an outlier for his career. And so you've got these guys who are supposed to be streaky. They're supposed to be shooters, but they're streaky shooters. And when nobody is streaking, when nobody is, you know, making shots from long range, the Heat have a problem. And so I've seen some comments, the Heat live and die by with the three ball. Yes, yeah. They do. That's by design, because they don't have a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge for San Antonio who could just go get his own shot regardless of where he's on the court, because he's got such unbelievable length and touch on his jumper. Or Kyrie Irving, who's just a magician with the basketball, can get to any spot he wants and it's just tremendous finishing under the rim. Miami doesn't have that. They need the three-point shooters to step up. That's why they tried to work their cap magic in order to retain Wayne Ellington. That's why you pay a guy like Tyler Johnson, who has a nice three-point stroke but went 0-3 against the Celtics. That's why you bring all these guys back. But ultimately, they're not star players, and that's the difference between guys that are role players and star players oftentimes, is that star players just do it consistently. You know, Steph Curry isn't a streaky shooter. James Harden isn't a streaky shooter. They are good three-point shooters. The Heat don't really have that one guy that can just consistently make threes at that level. I think Dragic and Josh Richardson could possibly get there, but they're not there yet. And both of them have so many other responsibilities that sometimes they're not able to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, Dragic is by far their most consistent shooter at this point, but he's only taking 3.8 three-point attempts per game. So it's not like he's shooting enough where that's the basis for the strength of his offensive game. But a lot of players have taken a step back. I mean, Wayne Ellington shooting 37.5%, and with the exception of that Pacers game, that number would probably be much lower than that. You know, Josh Richardson, 33%, Deion, 30%, Tyler, 25%. I mean, that's a drop-off that we did not see coming. Maybe you could make the case that James Johnson was probably not going to shoot 36%, but, I mean, Tyler Johnson shooting 25% is something I did not expect.
I still feel like the numbers will regress to the mean. I still feel like that's going to happen at some point. I'd be interested to see if it happens and what the offense looks like when it does, and if the Heat can sort of get on a roll here. All right, let's get to our mailbag. But first, I want to talk to you about LockedOnHeat.com. That's right. The guys who bring you your favorite Miami Heat podcast now have a website to write about the team. We'll have news, commentary, and analysis throughout the season. David and I, who are writers at heart, are extremely excited to bring you this site, LockedOnHeat.com. Bookmark it, save it, whatever. You can get your podcasts, the links to your podcasts there, and also just writing from David and I throughout the season. LockedOnHeat.com. All right, let's get on with the
mailbag.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. All right, so our first one comes from Greg on Twitter. He says, the Heat rotation is too deep. I feel like they need to go with 8 or 9 players. Right now, Miami has been playing 10 or 11 players a game. What do you think?
I think they've actually been cutting that down, to be honest with you. I think it shows that they've been playing a couple of players because, well, I mean, first of all, the loss of two starters, Hassan Whiteside, with the exception of that Magic game, Rodney Magruder for most of the season or the season thus far. I think that's why they're trying to find something there that hasn't been available. And he's made switches with the starting center position, or ostensibly the center position, in that Bam Adebayo has started the past couple games, and Jordan Mickey the two before that. But for the most part, I think like he's only going 8 or 9 deep. I mean, he only played, I think, 9 players against the Celtics.
Yeah, only played 9.
Yeah, and against the Spurs as well. So it's a tightened rotation. He's just looking for performances that he's not getting. You know, Deion in particular is struggling. James Johnson is having his moments, particularly from the perimeter. And you can't overlook the fact that they faced two of the better defenses in Boston and San Antonio. I mean, maybe that was the cause for your optimism at the start of the show. That clearly those were two of the toughest teams to get any points against, especially when you're struggling offensively. So maybe it's a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B, you know, that Miami's offense is not performing at the level it should, and that, you know, the defenses they face magnify those problems significantly. But as far as the rotation is concerned, again, I think he's doing what he can to try and find some chemistry this early in the season. And unfortunately, because certain players, Tyler, Deion, et cetera, haven't stepped up, it just doesn't look like it's performing at a high level.
Yeah, I think when Whiteside comes back, it'll sort of normalize things, right?
Absolutely.
Bam's not going to be starting at center. Bam probably won't be getting any
playing
minutes
at all. Yeah, exactly.
Once Whiteside returns, and he played 24 minutes against Boston. So that shows you the kind of bind that Eric Spoelstra's in right now. once Whiteside comes back, I think you're going to see about 9 players. I think it's going to be James Johnson, Whiteside, Dragic, Waiters, Josh Richardson, Winslow, Olynyk, Ellington, Tyler Johnson. That's it. Those are your 9. That's who's playing. And at that point, yeah, maybe with fewer lineup changes and different mix and match combinations, this team will be able to find some more consistency. All right, next question comes from Jay Smooth on Twitter. Injuries aside, is this team missing a leader? I thought it was solved during last season's win streak. This is an interesting question because I thought LaMarcus Aldridge was the best player for the Spurs in that loss, or in when the Heat lost to them. But I thought Manu Ginobili was the leader of that team. Absolutely. I think there was a key part in that second half where Manu came out and just took over the game for 4 or 5 minutes, and it was just all Manu Ginobili for San Antonio. Against the Celtics, Kyrie Irving takes over late in the game. That's the guy that they traded for. That's the guy Kyrie Irving is. Debate whether or not that if you could build a contender around Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving steps up for 4 to 5 minute stretches, and he's done it against the best team of this decade and in the NBA Finals, right? He can do it. I don't know that the Heat have that guy. Goran Dragic to be that guy. I want Goran Dragic to be that guy so badly. I don't think he is. And that's why he's not at that level of Russell Westbrook or Kyrie Irving or James Harden or Steph Curry or whatever. He's an all-star level point guard, but he's not a superstar. And I think that's why I don't think it's a lack of leadership. So I would maybe rephrase the question if I were Dave Smooth. I don't think it's missing a leader. I think Eric Spoelstra is a leader. Udonis Haslam, Goran Dragic, these are all leaders that the Heat rally around. I think what they're missing is that one guy who, when in doubt, you could give him the ball. And that's maybe partly because the Heat walked away from Dwayne Wade, or the Dwayne Wade walked away from the Heat, depending on whose side you believe.
Right.
I don't know if Dwayne Wade's at that player right now, but they're still looking to fill that void. And that's what's missing.
I agree 100%. And there are two types of leadership there. You know, I think Manu can still play at a high level in spurts, but he's still probably the emotional barometer for the team, much like I think Udonis and Goran probably are for the Heat. It's funny to say because we've talked about Goran's leadership, you know, internally, externally within the team. They've mentioned it on a number of occasions, but he does inspire the guys on the team to play better because he's such an incredible workhorse, even if people tend to kind of overlook or disregard that. But I think, unfortunately, as far as the leadership role on the floor is concerned, he may not be best equipped for that because he can't dominate in stretches the way that you pointed out. Kyrie Irving and others can. Now, the problem is that there was a player who did that during the streak last year, and he hasn't been at 100%, and that's Deion Waiters.
That's right.
He's the guy who we're expecting to take over and close out games. The closing role was one that you and I discussed a number of times last year. Fell on Tyler. Occasionally it fell on Goran. But for the most part, Deion was the one who was handling it and handling it at a very high level. That hasn't been the case this season. He's missing at the rim. He's missing from the perimeter. And he just hasn't provided that leadership/closer role. Eric Spoelstra talked about Irving's game last night, and he said, you know, he's one of the elite closers in the game. That's such a big role. You have to have a player like that. And like you said, Dwayne Wade held that role for a number of years in Miami, but he's gone now. So unfortunately, with Waiters taking a step back, at least momentarily, whether it's due to injury or something else, who knows? But he's the one that's missing. He has to be the one to step up, and I'm not sure it can happen anytime soon.
And Spoelstra always talks about Hassan Whiteside and how he still views Whiteside as having the highest ceiling on this roster.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's a situation where he, once he's healthy and he's back in the lineup, if there's stretches where he could just take over. Because we've seen him just be flat-out dominant. I mean, as somebody with his size and athleticism and just weirdly natural touch that kind of comes and goes. Maybe he could do that. And I think that we're missing Whiteside, even though you and I are apparently very critical of him. Whiteside's absence is very apparent right now.
Without a doubt. I mean, defensively, and we'll talk about this when we get to some questions later on, I mean, that he has a huge impact, changes the way that Miami approaches everything. But even offensively, yeah, he can have big stretches here and there. And even if it's not, it's probably easier to rely on a closer in the last few minutes of the game when you have Hassan's 18 and 12 through the first 30-some minutes of the game. And
those putbacks that he can clean up misses and stuff like that, I think the Heat are really missing that, and that hurts their overall shooting percentage as well. Okay, we're going to get to our final mailbag question, sort of, and then we're going to debut a new segment later on. But quick reminder to make sure that you subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel, which brings you all 30 Locked On NBA podcasts into one easy-to-follow stream in your podcast app. Our recommendation is subscribe to Locked On Heat so you get every episode automatically every day, and then subscribe to the Locked On NBA channel so you can scout Miami's opponents and keep up with the most interesting storylines in the league. Also, be sure to check out the NFL side of the network, including Locked On Dolphins, the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right. Pardon me, my desk, I think, just broke in the middle of that read. The drawer's not closing anymore, so. All right. That's fun. Battle through adversity. All right.
There we go.
Jake
Albright.
That's
how dedicated we are, yeah.
Exactly. How many times? This is really annoying. I don't know if I'm going to be able to carry on the show. Maybe I won't be able to battle through adversity. How many times did we front the post player and allow an easy pass tonight versus the Celtics? That's not okay. That comes from Jake Albright on Twitter.
Good point. And I think that's what I was talking about, the Hassan Whiteside factor. It's, he makes up for so many mistakes because he can switch over, leave his man, and then close out on help and block the shot or at least affect it at the rim. It changes the way that you do things. You can guard more closely on the perimeter, double team somebody, a ball handler on the perimeter, knowing that he's not going to be able to feed the ball as well. Or if they manage to feed the ball into the inside, Hassan is there to clean up those messes. So that changes everything about the defense.
Yeah. And look, I mean, they have to front. You're playing guys like Bam Adebayo, who right now he's got nice size. But
he's not big or strong enough, really.
Not as a rookie. Yeah, he's 19 years old. He's going up against grown men. I mean, going against guys like Baines and Horford and all these guys that the Celtics have who are just, huge and have been in the league forever. And then before that, they're playing with Jordan Mickey, who's basically a power forward that they were starting at center. So that's what happens. You have to front the post player there because the other option is you try to back him away from the rim. And the player catches it in front of them and just bullies their way towards the rim. So you've got to front the post player. This is what we've seen with Chris Bosh, for example, who was always undersized to the center, but was tremendous fronting opposing post players. And he would be able to cause turnovers that way because opponents are forced to lob it over Bosh's head. And if the pass wasn't perfect, Bosh could just deflect it and create a loose ball situation. All right, time for that new segment we just teased. We get a lot of questions about Justice Winslow. Pros and cons, good and bad. So I thought we needed to name it as a segment. We had the time to trade Hassan Whiteside segment. We're going to get away from that. Now we're going to do the Justice Winslow panic room. So now we're going to enter. Now we are entering the Justice Winslow panic room. So we have two questions. Our first one comes from Lyle Yahweh. Why are Heat fans hating on Justice Winslow? Why would you want to trade him after basically one season and after he's working his way back from injury? Even Pat Riley said to have patience. What do you guys think?
That's a tough one. Why are Heat fans hating on Justice Winslow? Because I don't think he's made nearly enough of an impact. The team hasn't been deep enough, during the 3 years of his career there. Obviously, there's the third season where he took a step back because of injury. This is his third season,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, second season.
Sorry, the second season where he took a step back because of injury. On the first year, it was, a star-laden team with Chris Bosh for half the season. Then, Joe Johnson, Dwayne Wade, Luol Deng even. Yep. And so his role was more clearly defined. He just hasn't taken that step. A player that we saw in Boston, who you like, Jaylen Brown, he's the guy who's made a leap. He's a very similar player in that he's got a long range on defense. He's got some shooting touch. He can get to the hoop. He's got athleticism, et cetera. And he's a guy whose role was very, very limited in his first season, but he's taken a big leap in his second year. Justice has yet to make that leap. So I think there's the reason for that hate there. We're not quite sure also how to define Winslow's role. Is he a ball handler? Is he a four?
And neither is Spoelstra. There's that whole other side of this where he played, like you're saying, he played one role his rookie year. He was going to play a different role in his sophomore year, got injured after 18 games, and now he's playing a different role in his third season. But it's really kind of like his second season. And he's coming off of injury. That's a very important thing. Even though he looks healthy, he still needs to get back into the flow of the game. He's got a really good feel for the game. He's got tremendous court vision. He does a couple of things really, really well. You know, he's obviously an elite level defender as far as his instincts goes, and he's a tremendous passer from that position. Right. We'll get to his role in a little bit, but as I do understand that fans are hating on him because you look at a guy like you said, Jaylen Brown, who has already taken a leap in his second year. You look at a guy like Josh Richardson on his own team, who has clearly taken strides in his own career and has had moments where he's looked like a real key player of this team. Winslow really hasn't had too many of those moments. I think his best moment came in the playoffs as a rookie when he was playing center against Jonas Valanciunas. You know, that was probably his best moment. And I think he could still have them. As far as wanting to trade him, I don't understand that from the fans. It's just, I see a lot of fake trades involving Winslow. Trade him for this and that, whatever. Nobody's trading for him. His trade value has never been lower than it is right now because nobody knows what he is. The Heat don't know what he is. You and I don't know what he is. The league doesn't know what he is. Maybe somebody would be willing to take a flyer on him, but he's also coming off of an injury. So they want to see how he bounces back from that. And that shot is a problem. And let's keep in mind that the labrum in his right shoulder was what he had surgery on, so that's important. And for shooting, so it's going to take him a little while. So I think we typically expect leaps from guys in their third years, but this is sort of like his second year, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm wondering if, you know, in those trade scenarios, what's the best that you could possibly get? Not a specific player, because I think that the numbers work pretty badly there. But as far as if you were to move a guy like Winslow, what would you be looking to get in return? And for me, I think it's probably a shooter at this point, somebody who might just specialize in shooting. I know that limits the versatility aspect as far as what you have on the floor. But I'm confident Miami could probably help a guy's defense. But as long as they're able to knock down shots in the perimeter, I think that's probably what Miami is missing the most at this point.
But you're looking for, like, not a Luke Babbitt type. Like, you're going to need somebody that can come in and do a few other things.
I mean, theoretically, yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't trade him for Luke Babbitt, you know what I mean? Like, obviously. Yeah. But I wouldn't trade Winslow for Wayne Ellington. And I think Ellington has been serviceable on defense.
I know it's easy to make the comparison from Babbitt, but how about Frank Kaminsky?
No, of course not. Why would we do that? He's been awful.
He's not awful. He's a good shooter.
Yeah, but he's like Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for, though. You're looking for fit on the team. Yeah. And right now, I don't know that Winslow has a fit on there. Yeah. And maybe he's capable of developing
more of a small forward, so you can like move Josh Richardson to the bench, allow him to actually play guard, and look for somebody at that small forward spot. Like we're doing this off the top of our heads, but yeah, I can't really think of anybody that's a small forward that like and in his prime Trevor Ariza would have been like perfect.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
All right, next question. Why do the Heat keep insisting that Josh Richardson, we were just talking about this, be the primary ball handler for such long stretches of the game, especially when Winslow is on the floor doing nothing? The Heat shouldn't try to change the way they play for Winslow, but if they have time for Richardson to have 10 to 15 possessions a game, then they can absolutely find room for Winslow. Who so far has shown to be better in that position? That comes from Chris Leach. So
I don't know. I don't know that either player stood out. Do you?
No. I thought Winslow stood out in that first game against Orlando, and that was the one time he got to play that position. But then again, and I've said this 100 times, but I hypothesize is because of Whiteside's injury that they are including Winslow in the front court rotation because they're down one more front court player. Once Whiteside comes back, I wouldn't be surprised if Winslow returned to the backup point guard position. I think that's where Winslow is best. I think he's better at it than Josh Richardson is. I think Josh Richardson is more of a secondary ball handler. I think Winslow is a primary ball handler for a bench unit right now. I think he is. And you put those two on the floor together with Tyler Johnson spacing the floor, I think that's a really good second unit. And, you know, I think the theme of this show unintentionally has been, let's get Whiteside back as soon as possible. And he should be playing in the next game, by the way.
He's not. He's already ruled out against Minnesota.
Oh, good. So, never mind then. So, yeah, I think the unintentional theme of this show is let's get Whiteside back and reevaluate. Like, let's just tread water for now. Right. And Miami has kind of done that. I know people are going to look at the Celtics loss and the Spurs loss. We were in both of those games, and you'll view those as probably should have won games. The only bad loss in the season is the Orlando game on opening night. That's the only bad loss in the season in my book.
That's Eastern Conference leading Orlando Magic to you.
Yeah, and they might be good. They're 4-1 or something. Like they're yeah. really, they're so I don't think they're going to be good, but they might be good. So yeah, that's kind of the situation here. I think Winslow should be playing that position. I understand that he's not right now because he's playing a front court position that they need. But that's as far as Chris's question goes. I think Winslow should have it once this team is fully healthy.
And I don't know that he's not the ball handler. He's just not the primary ball handler. It might be a by committee approach, but I looked at some of those assists that Winslow's racked up and that Richardson's racked up. With both of them out on there, a lot of them came when both of them are out on the floor, and I think that's just because the backcourt's not playing at a high level, especially Deion. You know, with him struggling a little bit, you're kind of hoping that somebody will take up the slack a little bit and be more of a playmaker. You know, I think at this point, Goron and James Johnson might be Miami's best and probably only playmakers on a consistent basis. And then you're getting it by committee from Richardson some nights, Winslow others. They're both averaging a couple assists per game, I think, because they're trying to do their best. And, you know, it just so happens if one player gets a rebound, they'll push the ball up the floor and then try to find somebody there. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that Spoelstra is necessarily saying you can't be the ball handler in this case. You know, I think they're just looking for somebody to step up, and unfortunately that just hasn't been the case.
What's your panic meter on Justice Winslow through five games?
Panic meter, I'd say it's a 5.
5, all right.
Of 10, obviously.
Well, I was going to say 1 to 11.
Oh, well, what is yours then?
I'm at 3.
Okay, so you're not panicking at all.
I'm not panicking at all. I'm not that concerned. I'd like that jump shot to come to be more consistent, but it comes and goes, which is better than what it was before, which it was just never here. Right now, it just sort of comes and goes. All right, well, we're leaving the Justice Winslow panic room, and we are wrapping up the show. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions for next week to lockedonheat@gmail.com. You tweet your questions and comments for our game recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat, which we've gotten a lot of those lately. I've been really impressed by our listeners with some of these comments and questions after the games. Make sure to subscribe to the show to get your podcasts automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Make sure to visit LockedOnHeat.com. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
God bless.